From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The top State Department official in charge of overseeing Blackwater USA and a growing army of private security contractors resigned yesterday amid a mounting furor over America's so-called mercenary industry. Billions spent, failing oversight. Condoleezza Rice testifying today before the House, and big questions being raised as Americans begin to grasp how much gun work and more the U.S. government has outsourced to private armies. This hour, On Point, America's private security empire under attack. Joining me from New York is investigative journalist Jeremy Scahill. He's a contributor to The Nation magazine, correspondent for the national daily news show Democracy Now! He's author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. Jeremy Scahill, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Wow, you wrote the book and the whole thing's kind of exploding under you right now. It's hard to know where to dive in. There's so much going on. But help us catch up just with the headlines this week, Jeremy. Everybody's head was turned after the September 16th shooting, 17 dead in Baghdad. And now this week, all kinds of things going on. Let's start, if we could, with the resignation of Richard Griffin. This is the guy who was supposed to be overseeing Blackwater and DynCorp and Triple Canopy and more. Contracts gone from $1 billion to $4 billion, we read this week. Why is Griffin gone, the man who was supposed to be watching all these outfits?
Well, it's unclear. In his resignation letter, he didn't even mention the Nisr Square shootings or Iraq even, and simply said he was going to pursue other endeavors. But I think clearly the administration is under a tremendous amount of pressure, not just from the Democrats in the Congress. Of course, you mentioned Rice appearing on the Hill today. Henry Waxman has really been going for the jugular on this with the administration. But also there's a diplomatic crisis between Washington and Baghdad. And I think that what we're seeing is maneuvers that are intended to give the appearance of some kind of a shift in policy or a change or a crackdown, when in reality, this is a system that's going to continue to flourish basically as it has. We're going to see some token changes, but the system is very much going to remain in place. And perhaps Griffin was some sort of a man overboard of sorts. Maybe he just decided he didn't want to take the heat anymore. It's unclear at this point. I don't see it as that significant of a move.
Interesting. Token change, you say, but also big reports out within the State Department this week, heavily critical, we read, of the way the State Department has handled private security. Is it more tokenism or real criticism?
You know, I don't know that it's so heavily critical. I mean, there were a couple of things in that report, and I read the report that I found interesting. I mean, the first point that the report makes is that the private security operators in Iraq, from Blackwater, Triple Canopy, and DynCorp, those are the three American companies that have been tasked with keeping alive all of the senior occupation officials. And Blackwater is the highest profile of those three companies, and it does the most mission-critical activities. They guard all of the diplomats that are going in and out of the green zone in Baghdad. But the first point that the report made is that these companies have been what they called highly effective in ensuring the safety of mission personnel. So what they're essentially saying is, yes, they've done the exact job that they're tasked with doing. Two interesting points that came out of this is that the report says that a drawdown of the U.S. military in Iraq is likely to create increased requirements for personal protective services, i.e., if you pull troops out, you have to send more mercenaries in. The second point that was made that I think is interesting is that the folks who pulled together this report said that the legal framework for providing proper oversight of these mercenaries, they call them contractors, is inadequate. And I found this stunning. They said the panel is unaware of any basis for holding non-Department of Defense contractors accountable under U.S. law, meaning they can't figure out how you would even go about prosecuting Blackwater if, in fact, its operatives have engaged in criminal activity. So, yes, there are some points that critics of the industry have been making for a long time that have finally made their way into official State Department discussion. But look, this report hardly even scratches the surface of the problems with this industry.
They call them contractors. You call them mercenaries. They say they've been highly effective in defending U.S. personnel. I think that is a matter of record. As far as I know, they claim, and I haven't heard it disputed, that none have died
absolutely
under their protection. Justify your label mercenary.
Right. Well, the fact is that the cost of keeping alive their principal, whether it's Ambassador Ryan Crocker or it's Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice or it's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who goes over to Iraq and is guarded by Blackwater, the price of keeping these high-profile occupation officials or visiting congresspeople or U.S. officials has meant carnage in Iraq. Oftentimes, we see incidents where operators from Blackwater or Triple Canopy or DynCorp fire on Iraqi vehicles just because they happen to get too close to their convoys. And what this does is it has a ricochet effect where you shoot up a vehicle. Maybe you don't kill the individual in question. Maybe you shoot out their tires. Maybe you just fire at them and they have no idea why you just did that. They go home, they talk to their family members, to their neighbors. And so you're creating this sense of rage. And then when deadly incidents happen, you then have families who've lost loved ones. And oftentimes, Iraqis haven't been able to distinguish between the private forces and the military. And so in response, they'll go and they'll attack active duty U.S. soldiers. And I've heard testimony from soldiers over the course of the past year talking about how the actions or misconduct of contractors have a blowback effect on the official U.S. military. On the issue of mercenary, right now in Iraq, Tom, there are over 170 private military, private security companies operating. 170. That's almost as many nations as there are registered at the UN, and they've descended on Iraq. Blackwater is the highest profile of them. Their personnel are drawn from over 100 countries around the world, many of whose home governments are actually opposed to the occupation. Blackwater, for instance, has hired Chileans, Colombians, Fijians, Poles, Bulgarians.
And how many personnel in those 170 private security companies?
Well, we don't know. I mean, the fact is that that the contractors who are working in private security, the mercenaries, as I call them, that are on U.S. government contract, no official from the U.S. military, the State Department, or any entity of the government has ever been able to give an accurate tally. We understand from the Government Accountability Office that there at one point late last year were 48,000 individuals documented to be working for U.S. companies or companies that work on behalf of the U.S. On contract in Iraq. That doesn't take into account the labyrinth of subcontractors or then the mercenaries that are working for other private companies.
Are you saying 48,000 security workers or are those dishwashers in Army bases?
No. This is right. There's 180,000 contractors in Iraq on the U.S. government payroll. Of those, somewhere between 25 and it could be as many as 50,000 on contract are working in security-related activities.
We're going to go back and look at where this came from, but I want to get the issues out on the table. There was a lot of attention to Blackwater after the September 16th killings, a lot of attention to whether or not those particular killings were justified, tracking down bullet holes, looking back at the video. Right. But hey, that's a couple of months ago now, and you're making a much bigger critique. Let's just get it on the table. What's your fundamental concern about the explosion in private security contracting?
Well, right now the focus has been on accountability and oversight. And I think it's important to have that discussion. But almost never is the rationale for using these forces discussed or what it means, the implications for U.S. democracy or for global stability. The fact is that both General David Petraeus, who's overseeing the surge right now in Iraq, and Ambassador Ryan Crocker, they both at times, and in the case of Crocker all the time, have been guarded by private security forces. They have both told the Congress that without these private forces, not just the ones that guard them, but the ones that do the dishes and drive the trucks, et cetera, the 180,000 contractors, without the private sector, the occupation would not be tenable. What that means is that no longer does the United States government rely on its own citizens to staff its wars abroad. It now can simply rent out the poor of the world, which is essentially what we've seen in Iraq, and then deploy them in a war zone where in some cases they're fighting the poor of the world or they're supporting the military forces that are occupying that country.
You know, I don't want to get distracted by dishwashers here or the poor of the world. I mean,
right.
The guys who are toting these guns are not the poor of the world. They're very well paid indeed.
Right, absolutely.
Let's focus in on that. What is the implication you're concerned about of having so many hired guns, mercenaries you call them, in the heart, I mean, first of all, of Iraq, but your critique really goes right beyond Iraq.
Absolutely. What we've seen is a system that has flourished now for, certainly during the course of the so-called war on terror, but it began much earlier than that, where you have a real dramatic threat to the nation-state system of organization in the world today, where you have public monies being funneled into the coffers of private companies who are, in fact, armed forces, paramilitary-type forces. Some of these companies have operations in 38 countries around the world. There aren't many governments of the world that have any kind of armed deployment in 38 other countries. Blackwater is actually sort of a high-end boutique on a strip full of Walmarts. I mean, it's sort of the Maserati of the industry. It's operating in 9 countries around the world. But what we're seeing is now the rise of companies, some of whom have the firepower and manpower to take out a small national military. They don't have to deal with the trickiness of democracy or parliamentary procedure or international diplomacy. They simply can rent their services to the highest bidder, whether it's a government or another corporation. And so what I see as the model here is what we've seen in Iraq, which is that they descend on it, they make billions of dollars, they use the money that they're getting from public funding from governments of Britain and the United States and Australia to then build up their own private infrastructure. And I think it's a startling development in world history that right now there are actually more of these companies operating around the world than there are nation states.
A startling development, and yet what does it matter? People have hired private security, you know, since time immemorial. Is there something about the scale or the role that puts something important at risk here? If so, what?
Well, the scale is dramatic. Yes, it's true that mercenaries are as old as history, but the fact now is that you have more private forces operating in Iraq, private personnel, than you have actual active duty soldiers. And so what this means is that you have a subversion of sovereignty of nations around the world where their armed forces are being hired up in the service of another government. It's the very essence of being a mercenary. And I think that that in the long run, we're seeing a very significant shift in how the world is going to be run, how wars are going to be fought. I mean, Blackwater has been pushing now for some time to be sent into Darfur as a sort of privatized peacekeeping force. And I think that's a real dangerous line that they're toting right now.
We're talking this hour about Blackwater USA and the American empire of private security, now under attack from Washington to Baghdad. My guest is Jeremy Scahill. He's author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. Of course, after everybody went nuts in the Iraqi government, first of all, when those 17 Iraqis died on September 16th, Eric Prince, head of Blackwater, came out, became very public. Here's a little bit from an October 14th interview of Eric Prince by Laura Logan on 60 Minutes, talking about that incident in Baghdad, September 16th, 17 Iraqis died.
Bad things usually don't happen by themselves in Iraq. Our guys get shot at on an almost daily basis. They don't even record all the times they take fire.
But based on what you know at this time, you don't believe that anybody did anything egregiously wrong?
No, ma'am.
I've not seen any
evidence to support any kind of egregious, malicious, intentional wrong behavior.
So when you hear the Iraqi government complete an investigation in record time, I think a matter of days, and pronounce you 100% guilty, what's your reaction?
Yeah, I have to. I take it all with a grain of salt because three of our fully armored State Department trucks had bullet pockmarks in them, and one of them was even disabled from the enemy small arms fire.
There's Blackwater CEO being, I'm not sure what, interviewed by Laura Logan on 60 Minutes on October 14th. Jeremy Scahill, you'd have to call that friendly fire if that's interrogative fire. Anything egregiously wrong? No, ma'am. And off we go.
Right. I mean, this whole blitzkrieg where Eric Prince made the rounds, I mean, it really reminded me. I felt like I was sort of watching like a Pravda program or something. He's on with Laura Logan on 60 Minutes. And the whole piece was presented as, you've heard the Iraqi government side. We know what the U.S. position on this is. Now let's hear Blackwater's side. And there were so many points in that interview where issues were raised in a way that Eric Prince was able to seize it as a sort of propaganda moment. I mean, one of the most startling things about the 60 Minutes piece, I thought, was when they mentioned that 4 Blackwater operatives had been killed in Fallujah in March of 2004 and used by the Iraqi resistance as sort of trophies. And then Laura Logan says, and they've been memorialized at Blackwater's compound, and doesn't even mention that the families of those 4 men are suing Blackwater, alleging that it was the company's negligence and drive for profit that led their men to be sent in there undermanned, underarmed, and in soft skin vehicles instead of armored vehicles. No mention of it whatsoever. Mm. I mean, Charlie Rose's interview with Eric Prince, I think, would have made, you know, sort of the Minister of Information of the Soviet Union blush with embarrassment.
Well, that's rough, but we'll hear a little bit of it and see what our listeners think. We'll look at how we came to this point and how quickly we've come to this point. But let's take a call or two first from Manchester, New Hampshire. Jeff is on the line. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Love your show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to kind of comment about what has occurred, what I have seen in the 18 months that I spent in Iraq as a DOD contractor. I mean, the military pretty much knows, you know, everything that's going on in regards to Blackwater, and it's been pretty much an issue where they just haven't, you know, dealt with it. I mean,
Did you see problems, Jeff? Did you see problems firsthand with Blackwater in Iraq or not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you see them on bases, and, I mean, half of them, you look at their eyes, and, I mean, they're all roided out. I mean...
Roided, steroided, pumped up, jacked.
Oh, they're jacked. They're always jacked.
Yeah, but maybe they need to be jacked to do the dangerous job that they do. I mean, is this what we need in Iraq to keep officials safe there?
Not to the extremes. I mean, they go to the extremes, and that is the problem. I mean, I drove convoys from Tikrit to Kirkuk. I mean, when I got there in 2004, there was no problems. We were driving those routes in soft vehicles. We had no problems with that, but when people started dying on those roads, I mean, then it got to the point where you couldn't even go up the road.
Yeah, we know that, and Blackwater kept them moving, but you say it looked too aggressive to you. Jeremy Scahill, take us back. How did we get into this? I mean, why do we have heavily armed private security guards all over the place anyway in Iraq? Don't we have the world's biggest military? Why are we using these guys?
Well, the official rationale for it actually is quite interesting. I mean, this goes back several decades. I mean, really, the sort of beginning of the Cold War was the start of the privatization of the war machine, where you encouraged companies to get involved with the war machine. And then the idea was that competition was going to create a better product. And historically, it sort of existed in the weapons manufacturing or military hardware industry. During the 1991 Gulf War, we saw the first real significant deployment of private forces or private contractors. But they... traditionally, or at that time, they were primarily doing the peeling of potatoes, the driving of trucks, the building of tent cities. And Dick Cheney, at the end of his time as the defense secretary under George H.W. Bush, one of the last things he did was to commission a study from a division of Halliburton, the company he would go on to head then during the 1990s. And Halliburton was paid several million dollars by the George H.W. Bush administration to perform a study that would seek to privatize as much of the military bureaucracy as possible. And the idea behind it was that if you get the soldiers away from the potato peeling, you then have a soldier that can be on the battlefield with his weapon. And so if you hire private individuals to perform non-combat functions that had historically been performed by the soldiers, you increase the size of your actual fighting force. And so what that did is it expanded something called LOGCAP, which is the Civilian Logistical Support Program used by the Pentagon. During the 1991 Gulf War, the ratio of soldiers to contractors was about 60-1. You fast forward to the invasion of Iraq in March of 2003, and you had 100,000 contractors that essentially went in with the occupation force. So that's a drastic increase. Now there are more private forces in Iraq, 180,000, than there are U.S. soldiers, 170,000. And to directly answer your question, when it was originally envisioned, this program, it was not to include individuals who are going to participate in armed combat. And so you have two forms of armed contractors operating in Iraq right now for the U.S. government. Those that work for the Department of Defense and guard, for instance, the Army Corps of Engineers, or General David Petraeus, who at times has been guarded by these private forces. And then you have the three major American companies who are not working for the Pentagon. They're working for the U.S. State Department. Okay. So they're sort of like an armed wing of the administration.
Right.
And as this report points out today, even Condoleezza Rice's own people who went over there to investigate can't tell her what laws apply to their activities. And so the caller raised something interesting. He says the military knows what's going on with these guys. Ah, but the military is not technically responsible for overseeing their work. And that's where one of the major problems lies.
So many questions. I don't know where to begin. And I should say, by the way, the headlines just coming out today are that Congress is going to move to put all armed contractors operating in combat zones under military control. Senator Carl Levin pushing this. We'll talk about where that may go. But there's this moment you point out where, I mean, when we first went into Iraq, the military was in charge of everything. When things went badly, they got stripped of some of that authority. And you say that when they first went in, U.S. military did protect everybody in Iraq. But once they got stripped of that authority, as you describe it. You say Donald Rumsfeld, then Secretary of Defense, his revenge was to pull security from State Department officials or many of them, and which created the need for Blackwater. Is that right? Could that be why we're...
Well, I don't know so much that it was necessarily revenge. I mean, there certainly was a major conflict between the State Department and the Pentagon at the time when Colin Powell was Secretary of State, Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense. But the way that this started in force in Iraq was when Paul Bremer hit the ground, the first sort of envoy to Iraq that Bush sent in after General Jay Garner's short-lived time had ended. And they gave Blackwater, a company which had not really engaged in these kinds of operations before, a $27 million no-bid contract to provide security for Bremer. And then that ballooned into a $100 million contract and then a $320 million contract. And you had DynCorp, Triple Canopy, Blackwater all of a sudden deploying. And before you knew it, you had this massive occupation force being guarded by private companies. And the thing is that the program under which Blackwater, Triple Canopy, and DynCorp operate, the Worldwide Personal Protective Services Program, the Diplomatic Security Division of the State Department, I mean, Tom, this was envisioned originally as the force that was going to protect diplomats in every country around the world. You have a couple bodyguards. They protect the ambassador in Bulgaria. It wasn't envisioned to guard thousands of occupation officials. And so that's why you saw this radical, fast privatization of their protective forces. They simply didn't have the personnel for it. And because traditionally, a chief of mission is only a couple of people operating in an embassy somewhere, not 1,000 or 1,500 officials that all need security.
I may be naive, but I guess I just don't understand why someone like General Petraeus, our top military commander there, should have private security. Or for that matter, the Army Corps of Engineers. I mean, this isn't potato peeling. This is toting the guns that make the war, guarding the general who leads the war. Why wouldn't that be U.S. soldiers?
I think the message that sends when the general who is overseeing your policy in Iraq, the surge policy, is at times guarded by private contractors, I think it speaks dramatically to this revolution in military affairs, where you now have these private forces tasked with some of the most mission-critical activities, i.e. keeping alive the commanding general. I mean, it's one thing to guard an ambassador, but when you're guarding General David Petraeus, that's a wholly different thing.
I'm going to come back and press for why that's actually happening, but a couple of calls here. Mark from Burlington, Vermont, you're on the air.
Hi, folks. How are you?
All right. What do you know?
I'm kind of going along the same lines that you just pointed out. I have a friend over there right now. He's not with Blackwater, but he's with another one of these security firms.
Okay.
He's making $10,000 a month. And the head of Blackwater made a comment of, when he was being interviewed that, my guys are getting shot every day and we don't even report it.
They've lost 30.
We have American troops making $1,000. I use that roughly, of course, for their combat pay. But why are we giving $4 billion to these groups, these private companies, and we can use that money over here to guard our John McCain's, Lindsey Graham's? Why can't our troops do that? If they can't keep the diplomats out, don't be walking down a marketplace and buying a rug when you have guys making $10,000 a month guarding you. And General Petraeus, if we can't do it with our own troops, get out.
There's a view and there's a question. And Mark, let us let that hang for just a second here. Let me go to Peter in Boston. Peter, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Great show as usual. Listen, just to preface my remarks, I'm a combat veteran Marine Corps from Vietnam.
Okay.
I also happen to be an attorney for the last 35 years. And from a tactical, listen, I'm not a big Bush supporter, but where we're at. First thing, we need these Blackwater guys because we don't have the troops. I can tell you Camp Lejeune, Camp Pendleton doesn't have enough Marines to stand guard duty. They have rent-a-cops. All the big bases. That's why we need these guys over there.
Secondly, why shouldn't we raise the troops then instead of handing our national security over to private contractors?
Okay. I'm not saying that that's not a possibility, but it's going to take time. But the other point I would like to make, these guys, you keep this knock on these guys being mercenaries. And listen, again, we need more supervision of them. I absolutely agree with that. You need, but here's the major problem I see is that we are way undersourced with military people. Mm. A lot of these guys are ex-paratroopers, ex-special forces, trained people. Here's my question. Why shouldn't these guys are willing to step up? Everybody's knocking this concept of mercies. If they're willing to step up for pay and put their life on the line and they're making 10 times more than they did in active duty, why shouldn't we allow them to get paid? I can tell you, I see these Harvard Law School, my alumni, BU, coming out of law school making $200,000.
Yep.
Because they're bright and crafty, and they're signing for gazillion dollars for corporations. They earn more money. They should deserve more money than a kid who's willing to say, hey, I'm a special op. I'll work out there for 10 grand. Why shouldn't they get paid?
And
I say the parallel I see is like towards the Roman Empire Forum. When you get an elite class, and this is what's happening, when people are too special, and their kids are too special,
yep,
to step up to this country and pick a rifle up. This is what's happened. I suggest your guest probably has never been in the military, and it's easy to sit back in the rear with the gear and criticize all these guys. Hey, what are they doing?
Yeah.
How many kids will put their kids up with a rifle in their hand?
Peter, you've got great points there, except one thing I have to point out. These guys in Blackwater are not in the military, and yet I take your points, and they're big and tough ones. Jeremy Cahill, respond, please.
Yeah, well, first of all, the entire premise upon which the caller is basing his argument is that the war in Iraq is somehow in defense of the United States. I mean, this ultimately boils down to whether or not you believe that that our country should be engaged in offensive wars of aggression and occupation.
Can we not have that that argument in this hour? Do we have to?
Well,
have
the only reason the only reason why I bring it up is because in order for what the caller said to be true, you have to believe in this particular war, because it would be untenable. He's right, without these forces. And on the issue of pay, it's not just a matter of we need forces, so let's pay them more money. What message does that send to the active duty troops who aren't wearing the Blackwater Bear Paw logo on their shoulder, but are wearing the American flag, and they're pulling in 40 grand a year to be in the exact same war zone as a guy who works for a private company? It crushes the morale, and it encourages people to jump from the active duty military over to the private sector, which we've seen happening consistently for the past 4.5 years in Iraq.
Right,
so,
but Peter says,
very serious issues for the military.
Yeah, but he says, don't beat up on Bush here. The American people, you know, too many of them now feel too special to serve in the military. We're at war. They don't want to be in it. So you got to do something.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that. I do think that there's certainly, you're not seeing the Bush twins running over to join the military and jump over to Iraq. And there's only, I think, two active Congress people who have children who are serving over in Iraq or Afghanistan right now. But the thing here is that if you have a war that's a war of aggression and not for national defense, then your people are not going to want to sign up for it because they don't see their national security at stake here. And if this was a war that the American people supported, you would see more people joining the military. You wouldn't need to rely so heavily on soldiers from around the world working for private American companies. Hey, that's a fact.
And Peter says, hey, you know, grow up. There have always been mercenaries. And it kind of suggests there always will be mercenaries.
Well, you know, let me directly answer also the question that you put to me before about General Petraeus being guarded by these guys.
Yeah,
I mean, we can whack at Blackwater, and we can whack at Triple Canopy and Dyn Corp and criticize them. This is a demand-based industry. Blackwater is performing a service and oftentimes is doing exactly what they were paid to do by the U.S. government. So this is not just about Blackwater, and that's what's disturbing about a lot of this media coverage, even the critical coverage. It's a bad apple narrative. The General Petraeus at times is guarded by private security for two reasons, one of which is that they don't want to take active duty forces away from the battlefield when they need them. They're in a crunch for troops. So they say, we'll get him private security to take him from point A to point B so that we don't have to pull active duty soldiers. But the other thing is, and this is a sort of sad reality, these private forces, in many cases, are better than the active duty military, especially at executive protection, at keeping alive the noun. Yes, Blackwater has a stellar record of keeping alive all these officials. They've also enraged a hell of a lot of Iraqis.
Talking this hour about the Blackwater backlash. Jeremy Cahill, investigative journalist, is my guest. His book is Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. Mercenary, he calls it. Jeremy, in your book, you write about Eric Prince's kind of view of the future, of the possibility of the world, and you describe a moment where, I don't know why, but he's in Germany, he's driving on the Autobahn, and he sees some of the little old Trabants, the East German cars, chugging along, and then here comes this Mercedes S500, 140 miles an hour it blow by as all the others, 300 horsepower, you know, super sophisticated, all the bells and whistles. And in that moment, Eric Prince sees a model for what a private military could be, and what is that?
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting that Eric Prince very much views Blackwater, and he's used this term himself. He says we're like the FedEx. We want to be the FedEx of the national security apparatus. We want to do for the post office. You know, we want to do for the military what FedEx did for the post office. And he says, if you really want a package to get somewhere, do you send it through the post office or do you send it through FedEx?
But this ain't selling stamps. This is
exactly right. Right. I mean, I usually say it's not selling cereal. Yes, no. It's not selling stamps at all. And what Prince has done though. Is he sort of built up a parallel private structure to the national security apparatus. Blackwater, it's a very small part of what they do, their operations in Iraq. This is a company that has several divisions. They have an aviation division, a maritime division. They just started recently a private intelligence company headed by three veterans of the Central Intelligence Agency called Total Intelligence Solutions. They're manufacturing surveillance blimps that are being marketed to the Department of Homeland Security for use in monitoring the U.S.-Mexico border. They're manufacturing an armored vehicle, which is going to be one of the fastest, most versatile armored vehicles in history. It also is going to be approved for use on U.S. highways.
Highways, a military armed
right.
vehicle?
Right. It's an armored vehicle that is going to also be approved for use on U.S. highways.
Okay. And under what circumstances? Just anytime they want to roll it out? To go where? To do what?
I have no idea what the thought is there. I just think it's an interesting tidbit about the production of this. This has been talked about a lot in the industry. This armored vehicle Blackwater's creating called the Grizzly, and they're sort of taking what they describe as the versatility of an SUV with the durability of a traditional armored vehicle. And I mean, the fact is, Eric Prince is an extraordinarily visionary guy. He's shown himself to be ahead of the curve on so many of the trends in the military world, and that's why one of the reasons why Blackwater does such a robust business in training.
We spend $400 billion, or I don't know how many hundred billion, on defense in this country. How can it be that a private contractor, yes, they made a lot of money, but nothing like $400 billion, how can it be that they would be more sophisticated, better resourced than our actual national military?
Well, let's remember too that I mean Eric Prince himself is a veteran of the U.S. Navy SEALs. He's surrounded himself with some serious heavy hitters from the intelligence, military, the world of government. I mean, Kofor Black is one of the most important people at Blackwater right now. He was a 30-year veteran of the CIA. He ran the Central Intelligence Agency's Counterterrorism Center after 9/11 and shortly before it. Led the hunt for Osama bin Laden, a man who has a deep reaching career in Central Intelligence, but also. You know, Eric Prince has been very, very close to the military structure, the intelligence structure, the special forces community. The answer to your question is, I don't know how it is that a private company is in this position, but I do know that we've had a radical shift in how we have gone about building up the U.S. war machine. While certain portions of the military program have been cut back, we've had a dramatic increase in private sector involvement. And so that's why I think you see these companies like Blackwater or Raytheon or Northrop Grumman, who also manufacture weapons for that matter, becoming much more prominent in the U.S. war machine. We've defunded the public institutions and massively funded private institutions.
But once they're private, that means they don't have to be employed by the U.S. government. I mean, could Eric Prince, could Kofor Black, with all their experience, with all their insight gained working inside the U.S. government, could they go to work for, I don't know, somebody else, Saudi Arabia?
Well, I mean, that I think is a really scary scenario for people of all political stripes in this country where you have, I mean, Eric Prince says we would never do anything that's against the interests of the United States government. But how does he define interests of the United States government? Who defines those interests? Blackwater has a very secretive affiliate that it registered offshore in Barbados, which is a very traditional mercenary outfit called Greystone. Mm. And the services of Greystone are being, these sort of small armed teams or training programs are being marketed to Fortune 500 companies as well as governments around the world. And that's when you really get into the scary stuff that we talked about at the beginning of the show, which is that you privatize Central Intelligence Agency careers, Navy SEAL careers, and then you put them on the open market. That's pretty frightening.
Let's go to Paul in Columbia, South Carolina. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, great show. My concern is what you started off this segment with, which is the commercialization. You asked about what are the ramifications, and the ramifications are, if you're commercializing the military part of it, they're serving commercial interests. And they're serving commercial interests in the larger sense that we start using these forces in support of wars that the American people don't support because they don't support, they don't get behind a draft, they don't get behind the public policy behind the war. Mm. But what they do get behind is the idea of sending off our people through the highly paid to fight wars for commercial purposes where you know, Halliburton and KBR Root and all that get these huge contracts. contracts to build up these societies that our military has destroyed. And, you know, we're making money. We're billing them. We're billing them on the ground. And you know, but what are those ramifications? What is the rest of the world going to say when America says, hey, get on board with this military adventure that we're going to embark on that we think is politically and socially permissible? It's a good move to get engaged in this. And they say, hey, we're not getting behind you. You're doing it for money. Don't even kid us about the principles involved. You don't have any allegiance or loyalty to the principles of America. You're doing it so you can line the pockets of KBR and all the rest of them.
Paul, we've got the perspective, and I appreciate it very much. Let's get another call right here in Newtown, Connecticut. Jim, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. Yeah. It's a fascinating show. Just a quick observation and then a question. With all these various companies now billing the U.S. taxpayer for these services, I think it's safe to say we've gone from the coalition of the willing to the coalition of the billing. So at least we still have that in Iraq. Secondly, I wonder if your guest might speak to the question, is Blackwater active in a security role in the United States at present in any situation? And what...
You mean domestically, on U.S. soil?
Domestically, yeah. Thank you very much.
Jim, thanks very much. Let me hold that question and get one more call here. April calling from Beverly, Massachusetts. April, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I've just got a few questions. Obviously, it's been brought up that it's a huge conflict of interest. So my questions are, how come, how much was opened up to bidding in the beginning for other companies, and who is actually heading these companies? You know, are they involved in politics in this country? You know, who is this serving? Because a lot of people are getting rich. That's the reason we're not leaving this war. Is it for any other reason? It's because the pockets are getting lined of very, very wealthy corporations.
April, we'll look at that as well. Okay, Jeremy, there's a lot there. I mean, let's go first to who's making what and sort of follow the money for us for a minute here, and then to our caller's question on whether or not Blackwater has been active domestically on U.S. soil.
Well, on the issue of Blackwater, the initial contract that it got in Iraq was that $27 million no-bid contract. And then Blackwater was hired off of its General Services Administration schedule, which is sort of was described to me in the book by a former CIA operative as sort of the Walmart of government shopping. Once you're approved to be a GSA vendor, you can then push your goods and services to the federal government. And it very much becomes who you know. And so Blackwater...
$27 million looks like peanuts now, given the way
$27 million is peanuts. That was the in, you get that initial contract, mm-hmm. and then within a year, you're looking at a nine-figure contract where you're being awarded a $320 million contract to provide diplomatic security. And the fact is, there are only a handful of companies in the United States that can do this, and the three that are performing those services right now for the U.S. government, Triple Canopy, DynCorp, and Blackwater, have made a tremendous amount of money. But I have to say, I would even say that the billion dollars or so that Blackwater has made in Iraq is small peanuts compared to what Blackwater has coming down the pipeline in U.S. government contracts. Well, they were just the recipient, and they shared it with four other companies, of a $15 billion contract to be engaged in the so-called war on drugs, to fight terrorists with drug ties. And so I think we very soon are going to see Blackwater joining DynCorp in Latin America. DynCorp for years has been active in Colombia, Bolivia, Ecuador, and now it seems that Blackwater is getting into that. So Eric Prince recently has been saying he sees the security front in Iraq diminishing. He also knows that his horizons are looking very bright. They just got a $92 million contract to provide aviation services for the U.S. government. U.S. military in Central Asia. I mean, Blackwater's winning new contracts every week.
That's a lot of money. Follow it through for us. Where does it go? I mean, you could buy a lot of influence with that kind of money. So where's it end up?
I mean, in the bigger picture here, one of the things that I think is really disturbing about the role of these companies and the democratic process in the United States is that the Pentagon can't give campaign contributions. The State Department can't give campaign contributions. And so when you privatize $4 billion a year and pass it off to private security companies, it's in their interest then to fund the very candidates whose policies make their existence and their success possible. And so in the case of Blackwater, we've seen Eric Prince be a very solid ideological foot soldier for the campaign causes of the Bush administration and its allies. In fact, Eric Prince has even given money to the Green Party to defeat Democrats in elections. And it's certainly his right to give money to whoever he wants. But then when you see the policies that are enacted by the people he's funding make his meteoric ascent possible, it raises some very disturbing questions. We have a special interest group that's, in fact, heavily armed.
There's another number in here that just stunned me. 70% of our spending on intelligence now going to private contractors. 70%? Is that right? What does that mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are 16 intelligence agencies in the United States that operate under the Director of National Intelligence, which was sort of this consolidation of the intelligence world that happened under Bush. And recently it was revealed, I mean, I think Walter Pincus broke the story in the Washington Post, that more than 70% of the intelligence budget in the United States is now being farmed out to the private sector. And so that means that you have private contractors who work for companies like Lockheed Martin or Booz Allen Hamilton, SAIC, Raytheon, they're involved with every level of the U.S. Intelligence apparatus, including providing intelligence that is then used in the presidential daily briefing.
But it sounds like something that's been there for a long time, has it not?
I was talking to a former CIA analyst who worked at the company for 30 years, and I was mentioning these reports to him, and he hadn't seen them yet, and he said, oh, that can't be true. And then he looked it up and he called me back. He said, I just find this shocking. He said, this is so dangerous.
But are those like think tank guys, wonky guys?
Oh, sure.
That's not Blackwater. Then it's not like they're saying.
But
I guess, I mean, the really scary thing would be if your intel came back, if it was skewed in order to justify more deployment of private security in order to make bigger profits.
Oh, no, but that's true. No, listen, Tom, between 50 and 60% of the force of the CIA's most important division, the National Clandestine Service, it's employees of for-profit corporations. They're absolutely involved with the gathering of human intelligence. I mean, the CIA for years has used independent contractors. Now they've sort of begun to outnumber the actual staffers in these things. It's not just the think tank guys. They're definitely involved with it, but also very much in the field.
The other question was domestic deployment, Jeremy. Our time is short, forgive me, but that's an interesting question.
Well, you know, Blackwater's first sort of major deployment inside of the United States came after Hurricane Katrina, when about 600 Blackwater operatives were deployed, stretching from Texas through Mississippi and the Gulf. And you have, as one of your previous callers, and by the way, your callers have been really great. The previous caller said that there are private security guarding U.S. military bases. There are private security guarding nuclear facilities. This is an exploding industry, and Blackwater has a small part of it right now. The big thing to watch, Tom, is going to be the border. Are they going to start deploying private forces on the border? And Blackwater's president certainly has testified at hearings aimed at privatizing the border patrol.
Let me take a call, Ted, in Hampstead, New Hampshire. Hi, Ted. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
We're okay. What do you know?
I'm fine. I'm sitting back listening to this nice liberal program, and I just hear a lot of whining about the private sector and, you know, really capitalism, what this country is founded on.
What's liberal about wanting our military to defend our nation? What is liberal about that?
It's very liberal.
Why?
You guys keep on going at... You know what?
Our armed services, our men in uniform defending our country. What's liberal about that?
That's interesting. Why can't I speak? You want to shut me down?
No, it's just I'd like to know what is liberal about
it. Is you guys, I have friends who work for Blackwater and whatnot, and they're seething liberals, and they'll take a paycheck, but they'll come back here and they'll say mean, nasty, rotten things about George Bush and his policies, but yet they'll go over there and accept the almighty dollar that's being paid because they have to be paid because there's no military.
Are you comfortable with the privatization of so much of our security work? Is it okay with you?
Absolutely. I'm very comfortable with it, and it's obvious you guys aren't.
Well, I mean, maybe there's just different ideas about what, you know, where capitalism belongs and where it doesn't.
But, you know, Tom, I think there's also something here that seldom gets talked about, and that is that we have seen so many senior military people stepping forward and talking about the devastating role these private forces have had on the official U.S. mission in Iraq. Now, you don't have to buy this or think it's legit. Let's just accept for a moment that the Iraq war is on and that there's something just about it. We have seen generals and other military commanders say Blackwater is hurting our counterinsurgency effort, that the private sector forces are actually hurting the work of the active duty military. And to me, if you don't buy anything else that's said about this, how can you not listen to what the military commanders and what so many veterans are saying about the devastating impact these companies have had on the official role of the military in Iraq?
Let's just go straight to this point, though, Jeremy. You know, Ted says it's A-OK with him, and capitalism has done wonders for this country. I mean, look, we're you know, an economic wonder. But maybe democracy comes just a little bit before capitalism in our priorities. At least the Constitution would kind of suggest that. So do you see a threat to the democratic side of what we're up to as a country in so much private security.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think at the center of it also is
what is that threat?
Right. Well, first of all, I think that when you don't have to depend on your citizens to fight your wars, then the actual citizens of this country don't have to face the impact of what it means to go to war. But also, when you privatize so much of your national security apparatus, what you're doing is you're removing the citizenry further and further away of any oversight whatsoever of the forces that are in fact armed and on the U.S. government payroll. And I think that what's really disturbing is the increased trend toward using private forces inside of the United States. And I think that we are in the midst of a very radical privatization agenda. There are now more private forces than there are official law enforcement working for companies and government entities around this country. I think it raises a lot of very disturbing constitutional questions about civil liberties and about the veracity of our claim to have a constitution that protects the rights of its citizens.
You know, I grew up understanding the history of the American Revolution. There was a certain disdain for Hessian mercenaries that were in the middle of that. A bunch of them are buried in a graveyard that my family put together in upstream from Philadelphia. And, you know, there was a view that that's where mercenaries belong. Maybe that's changed. I'm not sure. Jeremy Scahill's book is Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. Jeremy, thank you very much for being with us today.
It was my pleasure, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.